Running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, after a fun visit with Sid. Went into about, got about, I don't know, three and a half topics covered. And we also took in the Sussex from Goodwood. That was fun. And we'll see about that filly, alcohol-free. What kind of reaction there is toward, you know, perhaps coming. Everybody loves the Phillies against the boys. It's like a mania. Seth, good morning. Seth Barrow joining me.
Everybody does love the Phillies against the boys, and there's one in the first race today in the jumpers that's going to be interesting. The Mean Queen. See if she can beat the boys on the jump side, so folks will have an opportunity to root in that direction.
Well, we had Kerry Breon yesterday, getting a significant weight break, because of the sex allowance. So 7 pounds on most of them, and 10 pounds on Bodes Well, Leslie Young's runner. 105 for the Kaiser, and I'm going to try to get there for that. I don't know if I do have a couple. Maybe I'll come directly for that, and then run and go do the errands, and then come back for the late action, including the Honorable Miss, which should be really good. Looking forward to it, and certainly it's hard, as we've said so often for a long time. Neil Pessin about as easy a guy to root for as there is. So nice that he comes to Saratoga with Bell's the One. We'll handicap that in a minute, Seth. Let's first do some of the kinds of recapping that we like to do.
Well, the weekend obviously was highlighted by the defeat of Malathat, but Maracuja for Robert Tross, who's, you know, fairly new on the scene, started off as the assistant to Robertina Diodoro out, you know, Western Canada, and winds up in New York with his wife. I've been trying, at some point I'm going to get him on the show, get both of them on the show, because his wife, who helps him out, graduate of Darley Flying Start. So I'd like to get some info on, you know, how that worked out for her. He gets it done with Maracuja with a nice late run on Saturday. The Lake George on Friday was interesting in that you had a Chad Price, Chad Brown horse at a little bit of a price in there. And that was followed up in a non-stakes race where there was a Chad Brown horse that paid 50-some dollars. So the betting public got a little off Chad, maybe a slow start for him, but I think they'll be back on board now with a couple results like that. The Shuby, I like Royal Flag on Sunday, and Royal Flag did it, got up late. It looked like Horologist may have the edge in, maybe the last, 16th of a mile or so, but then Royal Flag got kind of in gear and got up late in there and got it done. So I thought, like I said, I like Royal Flag, and then there was some results that were maybe a little bit surprising. So it was a fun weekend, I think, for people. If you played around a little bit, Maracuja, the longest price in the short field of four, and so you wound up with $30 in there if you took a pop and played in the picks or whatnot. And the picks over the weekend obviously offered some challenges, but there was the carryover subsequently, and folks took a pop in there, and people are clearly appreciating the $1 pick six, and given the way the first week and a half has played out, that's been a popular direction to go, obviously.
Well, where's my pad? Here we go. I'm not sure if I updated. Did I update the? No, I did update through Sunday. I've been tracking the multis, the pick fours, the pick fives, and the pick six, and with that kind of buy-in, you know, they ended up $1.17 million on Sunday with the carryover. But before that, you had the big opening day number, 87,742 in the pick six, then 4,000. 818, 1,576, 2,523, 2,700, 3,700, the carryover. And then on Sunday, with a fairly formful sequence, 2,871 on the pick six. The pick five is to me, just, and we brought this up already with you once, but the pick five is just exponentially outperforming the pick four. And I suppose on Saturday early, you know, with the upset and with a couple of other prices, actually, you did have the best, obviously the best pick four of the season so far, 6,690. But other than that, it's been really, I don't want to say meager. It pays what the parlay allows, essentially. I mean, what the tying together of the four winners pays, but the pick five, whether it's an exponential factor and you know, statistics, I rely on people like Andy and Marshall Graham for this, but and Paul Matisse, but you look at the winner of the fifth leg, Seth, with the pick fours. And sometimes it's nobody, you know, it's nobody that is unusual. And I mean, I've hit two so far, and so, you know, it's really buoyed the first quarter here of the meet. Is this day 10?
This is day 10.
So after today, we're 25% in. Whether it's the extra money in the pool because of a fifth leg and just the raw multiples, and also I think the inclination of people to cover, you know, extraneous horses, it's just outpaying the pick four. And so I started the other day when I brought this topic up. I started to lean in and increase, you know, the dollar amount to a dollar on the pick fours, no 50 cents, and even layering, doing an all A ticket, you know, for 50 cents or a dollar, and then, you know, the wider A B ticket, you know, for a dollar. And I'm not, you know, using as many horses, and I'm not going to try to pretend that the pick four is the place to, you know, swing for any kind of score. I think you resign yourself to the fact that, you know, the payments are going to be, you know, fairly ordinary, and try to hit them multiple times instead. That's what I'm going to almost look at the pick four like you would look at a double or a pick three.
Well, and that's a good point about kind of doubling up. People may look and see some of these days where things wind up a little bit logical, a little bit chalky. And, you know, again, that I'm just pulling up the chart from Sunday where the late pick four paid just under $50. But that's one where, like you say, maybe you have your normal ticket where you spread around a little bit, but then maybe you do another ticket for a buck where you play all the logicals, and so it's a small ticket, but it allows you the opportunity to have, if it does play out logically, have it a few times to make it, you know, a little more palatable in the end if it does kind of chalk out a little bit. But as you've said, the pick fives, it really took off almost immediately when it came around to the various tracks around the country and has become very popular, and yet it's a little more likely to offer value if you get just past one, or certainly past two logical players. The pick five starts to balloon up far more significantly than maybe the pick four will in those kind of circumstances.
Yeah, you and I have discussed this in different formats and in regards to different kinds of bets, it essentially fills the the smart approach that you want to leverage your best opinion. And even Seth, when you say, tying together the logicals, I think in the pick four, particularly now, you given that you're not getting the kind of return that at one time made the pick four what it was, and clearly the pick four is seemingly become a victim of the 50-cent denomination. I mean, that's been a discussion, and the pendulum has certainly swung in the other direction when it comes to this, where you're getting things like the Golden Hour double and the Breeders' Cup experimenting with the higher increment. Same thing with the we had this discussion. I think you were there. You were there with Joe Longo about Naira trying the $2 two-day pick four, things like that. And the pick four now, I think what you want to do is actually understand the logicals the horses that are logical as likely winners, but leveraging the price horses that you see, and especially if there's one in your sequence, in the sequence that, and when you find that 8-to-1, that 10-to-1, even 9-to-2, 5-to-1s qualified on this front, that's obviously you're going to bet to win, but those are the horses that can key the big, double pick three, pick four. I never used to say this about pick fours, but I think that's what you want to do. You actually want to relieve yourself of tying together too many logicals, because those are the horses that are depressing these prices.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I'm just kind of looking at this sequence here, which that late pick four on Sunday was four chalks, and then you had You're to Blame in there at $18. And then the pick five kicked off with the Pletcher winner in Misinterpret at $16. Other than that, it was the three favorites. So, yeah, if you're clever and play around and as you say, take your logicals and put them in, but get a little smart about where you're placing the other ones. It went from a just under a $50 pick four to a $630 pick five. So, there's the perfect example of what you're talking about, just by tossing in the Pletcher runner that, won at, $13 there. So, it's $16. So, yeah, it balloons up significantly if you get the right idea and the right little price at that 7-to-1 area in a pick five.
Well, and here I'll give you the example from Saturday where I liked in the nightcap. In fact, I made it the Capital OTB the play of the day, that Mike's Girl, and Mike's Girl stood out to me in that nightcap. Well, you knew you only were going to have Caravelle and In Good Spirits to worry about, or I should say Robin Sparkles and Caravelle. You only had to go too deep in the feature, in the co-feature, the Caress. Then came that allowance where Caramel Swirl was obviously the horse to beat. I played around with a second horse. I thought that Glass Ceiling at a price needed to be used. So 2x2, and then in the eighth race, which started the sequence, you had really you didn't have a whole bunch of horses to have to worry about. You had that Rastafara for Chad. I thought Ego Trip was okay, split then double, they're part of that entry, and I thought Baby Blythe was not impossible, obviously. So anyway, you had a perfect example of being able to be narrow through the middle of that sequence and then you had a horse like My Lips Are Sealed, who I thought was very vulnerable. So as a favorite, ended up being even money. So Mike's Girl wins, pays $19, is obviously the best price, and we certainly are more fortunate that Kara's Dreamer didn't win that photo and get up. But anyway, the pick four paid $109.50, and if you believed in a horse like Mike's Girl, to me, you know, that basically it saved the, you know, basically saved what was a pretty blech day for me. If you have that horse as your best bet in a sequence, well, then you want to leverage that with those obvious players earlier, and as a result, you could go with, you know, $5. You could hit that sequence 2.5 times, and at least you get back several hundred, as opposed to spreading, and you know, at 50 cents, and you put together a $48 ticket, a $60 ticket, and it got back $109. You're just trading. You're barely trading dollars. I mean, yes, you cashed a ticket, but that's not going to, at the end of the meet, you're not going to come out ahead at the end of the meet doing that.
Yeah, and it's a great discussion. We've said it a million times, and I've said it already a million times to people this year. Handicapping is one thing, and betting is a whole other.
Yeah.
You know, they're two sides of the same coin, but they're two skills that you have to master. And so it's a great discussion you have. And I'll just toss in, as I'm looking at the chart here, you talk about the $109 pick four. But again, to emphasize the pick five kicks off with, as I say, that $8 Chad Brown horse, Sifting Sands. And the pick five kicks up from the $109 pick four to $7,600.
Mm-hmm.
And that Sifting Sands was the first leg of the sequence. I'm not redboarding here because I didn't play the pick five, but I did. As that seventh race was going, I had not used Sifting Sands. But it's one of those that, and it happens a handful of times during the meet where you handicap, you're standing there, they're 5 minutes to post, and you start to look up at the board and say, well, this horse is a crazy price. And that was Sifting Sands. So I played some doubles with Sifting Sands and got out of that nicely with the $56 or $58 Chad Brown horse. It was, again, I'm not redboarding because I didn't have it in the mix, but it's worth, you know, juggling up, looking at the board, and being a little bit flexible and realizing certain horses that when you look at the board and the odds are just so attractive, change up and maybe or add a couple little bets to your portfolio too, because that one just looked too good to believe at the 50-some dollar price. And as I say, being the first leg of the pit buy sequence, somebody may have planned out their pick four the way you described. Then maybe you look up and see the big price on Sifting Sands and at least take a pop at the pick five with a little ticket, tossing that one into the opening leg.
Well, the other than, of course, Saturday's $220,000 pick five, the numbers have just been, you know, have been really strong. You know, 5,000 and 1,700, 1,500, 1,068, 7,600, the late, as you just mentioned. And, you know, and even you had the early on Sunday, you had the early pick five, 2,469. And even when it's ordinary, it's paying 6,7,8,900, you know, 979, 749.50, 614.50, 561. That was that middle pick five the first weekend that we hit, and we ended up getting it twice because of crowded trade scratching. So that ended up being an $1,122 hit. 539, 440, 408, 417. There was the early pick five. Interestingly, and I've been avoiding the early sequences, Seth, just because of time constraints during, especially Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It's almost impossible by the time I get off the air, you know, to then do all the changes and rewrite the tickets. And so I've only really been doing races, you know, 5 through 10. I think this weekend I did the 4th through the 11th. But the early pick fives, they've been productive, even with in some cases smaller sets of fields.
Yeah, and you alluded to it a minute ago, and I will take this opportunity to tip my cap to you with the Capital LTD play of the day, because we plugged into the mix this year, and you jump on the handicapping show a few days a week and toss out a play of the day, and man, you have been red hot. You might mention Mike's girl the other day. That was your top play, and again, had to sweat out. There was a photo there that was very close.
I've won two crazy photos. $19
winner. And yeah. Part of the whole play of the day for Capital OTB, we selected a team at the beginning of the meet, and every day there's $30 across the board placed on the plays of the day. And you have been making the team very happy, particularly with Mike Skirl, but opening day at Smile Bryan at a decent little price, too. So nice job on the plays of the day so far. Keep it
Thank
going.
You. And, you know, what's funny is I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, but Smile Bryan also was a harrowing photograph. I thought that was a loss. The one on Mike's girl, I thought, okay, he's okay. Then they played the replay, and I thought, ooh, this is closer than I thought.
Close.
Yeah, it ended up being that Kara's Dreamer came from.
I'll also toss out that I was walking through the grandstand subsequently, and a couple of people stopped me, a couple of older people, and they were like, oh, that big play of the day. And I forget now whether it was they had a son or a nephew named Mike who had a little girl they really liked, and they were kind of like, oh, once he was on it, we were definitely on it. So they wound up having a good day with Mike's girl, too.
That's pretty funny. I saw, speaking of Mike, I saw where Mike Callahan just tweeted the play, and I again waited till the nightcap this week or this today to start the day. That Bunker Hill in the nightcap. In fact, Seth, we can really let's shift into some handicapping mode and talk about the sequences today. And we'll come back around to the 10th race, but I ended up with Bunker Hill at 8-1. No changes in that maiden 40. And again, it just feels like, as I've been advocating, this is not a state bred race, but long on the turf is the place to go to town. And anecdotally, I'm going to guess that if people are keeping tabs on the tote of turf sprints, they've been, I think, chalky, and long on the grass has been, way more productive. So we'll swing around to that. Let's kind of ping pong back and forth. Maybe start early. Anything on this early part of the card that stands out?
I lost a couple. It's frustrating when you lose a couple of top picks, but I lost also one that I really liked at a price of Air Cavalry. I want to say in the fourth race that I thought.
Well, that's the Matt
12-1. So I lost a couple of prices early. I don't know whether I have anything clever. Well, the fifth race, it's 7-2, but Regal Empire. I have that one on top. We're 10.2 before the sale back in March. It's Mike Maker. He's okay with debut runners, but the dam produced a couple of win early types. One called Betty Smile was fifth, but then won in the second start. Another sibling called Vincent Gambini was fourth, then third, then one. And if they can win in the first two or three starts, I think that's win early. So there's maybe a little win early breeding, and horses, steady works. They aren't jumping off the page, but I thought Regal Empire could be live in the fifth. And Tim Buck, okay, the firster from Brad Cox, also I think could be a little player in the first start. And Raw Courage from the rail, coming out of a couple of off-the-turf sprints, gets to the grass and goes long in the third career start. I just thought that angle might make that one a little bit interesting, too. So in the fifth, I went 8-3-1-5.
Well, you bring up Air Cavalry, and Air Cavalry is scratching because of the start she made on Sunday. And this is Matt O'Connor, who is, the 24-year-old, right, give or take, Matt O'Connor, and the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program graduate. And we talked to him while he was in school. And he had been, he'd had a nice series of apprenticeships. He's got some very close ties to the game, and went right out on his own here to start. He's essentially, you know, off to a nice start, actually, with, you know, with limited chances. He's won three races so far after starting last year, late last year, and three wins and 32 starts so far this year, 2 for 14. And I want to say that this was his... I'm not sure if he... Let me see something. If he made a start, I guess... He did no. He did not start a horse last year at Saratoga, so this would have been his. It was his third starter at Saratoga because he started two on Thursday as well. His first two starters were on Thursday. Loves Misery and Kara's Nichols, but Air Cavalry came harrowingly close to providing Matt O'Connor with his first win at Saratoga, and that'll be a very special moment for him. This is Finest Racing Stable and an Air Force Blue filly, a three-year-old, and just missed.
Yeah, and I had question marks next to that one on the quick turn. It, you know, it was a function of the entries and whatnot, that it's just kind of overlap, but it was close enough. I thought if the horse did come back and coming in good form, but it was, you know, it was, as I say, just a function of the entries kind of overlapping the day. So it wasn't a shock that one came out, but we'll see. With the nice race under the belt at the meet, you would think he'll shoot for another start at the meet as well. So I'll look for him again. Hope that 12-1 morning line price holds.
Well, and let me see if, because I've been looking forward to having Matt on, and when Air Cavalry ran the kind of race that she ran, I said I got to get O'Connor on here. He's got Nutsy, Nutsy on Friday in the fifth race. With Dylan Davis. So that's his next starter, and we'll see if he's got anything going in today. All right, let's go back and forth, Seth, then, and give everybody our thoughts on the late pick five today.
Yeah, Master of the Obvious in the sixth, Cody's Wish, the Bill Mott runner. It's just, you know, I'm a buyer's guy. There were two in the toolbox, but sometimes you look down and it just stands out. Now, it was only the first start. It was over a muddy track. So I think you could make the case if you wanted to play around, you could play around it. But I put Cody's Wish on top. Shug has absolute courage for Cortland. I like that kind of progression of improvement, start one to start two to start three. Stretched out last time to the one-turn mile, goes to the two turns today. If this one appreciates the two turns, may get a little bit of an improvement and a breakthrough potentially. And then Chad Brown has Beatbox on the outside, who seemed to improve nicely off of that angle that I like. You know, a lightly raced two-year-old gets time off, comes back as a three-year-old, and sometimes they come back and prove. Seems like that's the case. Was behind Absolute Courage in the seasonal debut, but you would have to think this horse has the potential to build off that second start of the season and third start of the career. So I had it 6-2, 9-3.
6-2, 9-3, and for me, and I haven't built the ticket yet. I'll do it after I get off the air. And especially with the scratches that in the seventh, Shug coming out with both of his horses. And when we get to the eighth, Yes and Yes coming out is changing thoughts. So I'm glad I didn't devote a lot of time to ticket building last night when I typed this up. But Cody's Wish, I understand the even money, but I got a feeling is going to go up, not down, from even money, because there's too many horses here that so lightly raced and coming out of, you know, out of debuts, you know, particularly that Vindictive. And, yeah, you know, the second start of any horse's career is almost invariably the biggest improvement that a horse will show in its career is under that scenario. So Vindictive is far from impossible. I ended up going 6-3, 2-9 with Pipeline. In fact, both of that other Chad, the proverbial, you know, other, you know, horse of whoever's, but in this case, Beatbox, the 5-1. But Pipeline, Pipeline puts the blinkers on, and Johnny, how about Johnny joining the fray? Who does not ride all that much for Jad? And I thought that was a quizzical or an interesting sidebar to this that John Velasquez gets involved. So I Pipeline's got a look coming into this, and it might be another opportunity to get Chad at a square enough price. Absolute Courage, you mentioned for Shug, and stretching out, and of course, part of the story of 9 furlongs at Saratoga continues to be horses on and near the lead. That's an absolute priority. It just seems that deep closers just don't get there at this distance and up here, and that's been a long-standing scenario. So I like the fact that Absolute Courage is probably going to be in the race flow immediately. And then on the there was one other in here that the horse on the rail is to me.
I am the law.
Yeah,
a little turf to dirt move might make that one interesting.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that Luis Saez will look to that race that I am the law ran in the slop at Belmont in June, and try to have him that much more forwardly placed. It would not stun if the winner out of this. The fact that these nice three-year-olds, because this is a nice group. I mean, Absolute Courage was an $800,000 purchase. Well, not surprised that not only is the Curlin and Jim Dandy going to produce Travers starters, I won't be surprised if the winner of this, if he runs anything, from a fig standpoint, don't be surprised if the winner of this ends up in the Travers.
Well, you're right. It's a potentially nice-looking group. Anytime Cody's Wish, anytime you debut with a 90-plus buyer, that kind of signals that there's the potential there. But again, it was on a muddy track. Let's see what he does today.
Exactly. Seventh race, third level allowance. Yep.
My top two scratches, as I said, I had a couple of frustrating when you lose some top picks to scratches. I had a 5, 3, 6, and 9, the 5 and 3. You said earlier, the Shug horse is scratched out. So I scratched into the morning line favorite, Tammy, here for Chad. And the last race, I'm just going to kind of draw a line through that one. The races just before are good enough. But again, I always have to toss in the caveat. I originally had this horse down in the mix. I was willing to take a shot against. But with Tez, the number 9 on the outside coming in from Churchill, comes in from a nice win at Churchill, I think could be a player. So now I'm left with 6 and 9. As I play around a little bit, maybe pull in now, Speak to Me of Summer, who I think could be a little bit of an interesting player, too, with Joe Rosario on board for Clement. But again, after the scratches, I'm left with 6 and 9.
I'm in the same boat for the most part, and Tammy here may end up having a single and really lean on Tammy here in this spot. And I thought Sweet Melania was going to be a decent price with the presence of the 5-2 player from Shug, but Passing Out comes out and Hungry Kitten. So 6, 7, 4, 9 for me in here. And I think Tammy here is now a lone A, and maybe Speak to Me a Summer and Sweet Melania as C's. So that race really changed fairly significantly when you go from an 8-horse field down to 6. The third leg, the late pick 3, and you got a first level allowance, Turf Sprinters, and Yes and Yes I thought was a player, so that one coming out. Big package, your 3-1 favorite. And after that, it's a bit of a jumble after that. I suppose Noble Emotion becomes a clear second choice now.
I did use big package as the, you know, the light favorite, as you say, 3-1. I have a 3-2, 12, and 7. And the 12 is the interesting horse to me. Big package on top and makes sense. Another one of those, I'll kind of draw a line through the last. On the buyer, the race was okay, but the buyers just prior were pretty good. Colton's Command, I put underneath, and I went back to the career debut down at Gulfstream. You know, one of those puzzles in that the horse buyer-wise is going in the wrong direction. I'm going to hope for a rebound, though, because, again, that career debut seemed to signal some talent. But I thought Amsden at 12-1, this was a horse that debuted last year down at Colonial, winds up a solid winner. And off of that, Wesley Ward says, let's go up and try a little stakes race at Woodbine. Had some trouble in there off since, comes back as a gelding. And off of that race, the form is darkened, and so I won't be surprised if we do get a price here. But it's Wesley Ward with a horse that showed some nice talent sprinting on turf to start the career, now makes the comeback at a price. I'm definitely going to toss that one into my picks. So I have a 3-2, 12, and 7.
3-2, 12, and 7, and that's interesting because after Big Package, who we agree on, I've got three completely different horses underneath Big Package. I mentioned that Noble Emotion for Horacio De Paz, who always seems to show up here with serious players, contenders. United and Resolute, the 10, has some interest for me, Tommy Amos. And I sort of surprised myself, and granted, it's strictly a off of a push on the Clocker Report, but I like the sound of King James' most recent work coming into this for Jimmy Jerkins. And so I ended up at 12-1. I was kind of looking for a price inclusion, and seems to be a horse that, you know, coming off the maiden win, I always like that as a, you know, as a launch pad. You know, a little bit more improvement. I don't see why King James can't be competitive in here and gets the services of Tyler Gaffalione. That gets us to the honorable miss, the grade two. And this is really nice. I mean, this is what Saratoga, why Saratoga such appeal. You know, there's people, Seth, that'll make the drive from Hartford and from Scranton and wherever. And, you know, it's the one day that they're going to be at Saratoga this summer, and they end up getting treated to a grade two race with grade one horses and just a really good competitive set in this long running grade two standard.
Yeah, midweek stakes race like this. And I want to say, I don't know what day of the week it was. I'm pretty sure it was Lady's Secret, though, that actually kicked off the early double at Saratoga one afternoon in some kind of an allowance race. The first race of the day. It was. I'd have to go back and look it up, but I'm pretty sure it was Lady's Secret. But yeah, the honorable miss, a nice little Wednesday midweek stakes race with a horse like Bell's the one. I just couldn't get past that one. I liked Sconson that day. Wisconsin ran well, but Bell's the one ran better. Coming off of that, 4-for-4 at the trip, the solid workouts at Arlington leading into this, just seems like, yeah, she's the one to beat. But Reagan's Edge is a little bit interesting. Another one where the last race, I'm going to hope that we rebound from that. Had some trouble in there. It was the seasonal debut. It's been working nicely since that one. And I think the races last year, the races that ended the season, the numbers there fit nicely with this group. So maybe at a little bit of a price, that one. And Lake Avenue, who now in her four-year-old season has kind of rebounded to what she showed as a two-year-old. The three-year-old season was a little bit of a, you know, a lost season. But again, as a four-year-old now, she's kind of come back and lived up to the early promise. So I think Lake Avenue interesting as well. But for me, it probably pretty strongly goes through Bell's the one.
I ended up, and by the way, I will mention you, since you brought up Lady Secret, and she in fact did run at Saratoga, that race you're thinking of was actually a race that ended her career. You know, her history here had been pretty spectacular, you know, going back to the Whitney win and you know, her earlier sprinting days. You know, she had she had made. In fact, it's amazing when you think about it. There isn't more celebration about Lady Secret at Saratoga because the ballerina and the test, right? Going back. Did we ever?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the test and the ballerina, same season, in fact, going back to 1985.
Yeah, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth. That's an Andy Serling line, folks. I can not claim credit to that. Andy uses it to great effect. What is the distinction about Lady Secret that some people that probably doesn't occur to them?
Lady Secret, I don't know.
She's an Oklahoma bred.
Okay. Well, yeah, there you go.
One of the great, arguably the greatest Oklahoma bred. But you had, Kip DeVille, right? Kip DeVille, Oklahoma bred. And was Kipling himself an Oklahoma bred? I'm not sure. But there's a few. But when you go to Remington, she's like she's emblazoned. I mean, on everything, everywhere you look, there's pictures of Lady Secret, with good reason.
One of the greatest offspring of Secretariat.
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, that you brought up that race and August 10th, 1987, first race that day, And I imagine she, I don't have PPs, but I imagine she, you know, the tickets were, that'd be interesting. We're going to have to go look for that. We're going to have to go look for that chart. 1987, I may actually have, I may have that down in the back room.
That would be fun.
Back to and that's one of the things when I'm I've made this transition away from the charcoal but that's one of the real pleasures. Then I'd go pull an old form out and use my charcoal starter, the stoker, and I'd end up taking pictures of PPs and sending trainers all over the country. I mean, look at this. Yeah, look what I just found. And I'd send it to jocks. It's pretty funny. Anyway, the ninth here, the Honorable Miss, let's get back to the feature. I picked Bell's the One, and yesterday when I was sort of anticipating this race, I thought Don't Call Me Mary had a progressive look, and at 12-1, I mean, there's horses that can win this, obviously, beside the favorite. And at 12-1, Don't Call Me Mary's my value, second choice. And at the least, she's a B. Ain't No Elmers is going to have to go with Adam Pakiza coming to town, the biscuit. And you mentioned Lake Avenue for all the right reasons. I'll tell you who also, upon further review this morning, when I was trying to, make some other determinations, second off the layoff, Cherie DeVoe's got Reagan's Edge. And, she ran well here last year in the Prioress. And second off the layoff, I may end up incorporating her. At first pass, I didn't. But Lascano gets back aboard. He's, ridden her really well. I mean, the allowance win and the two graded stake placements in the victory ride and Prioress. Reagan's Edge is the other contender. So I think this is going to be just a terrific, terrific running of the Honorable Miss.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as I say, I use Reagan's Honor right underneath. So I think that one is absolutely live. So, but again, for me, it pretty strongly goes through Bell's the One. But
understood.
We'll see how it plays out.
The Nightcap.
I have your horse in the mix, but I'm looking at over on Equidaily. I list usually the top four horses, but sometimes they're wide open races, and I think I listed about eight today in this race, which is very unusual. But a couple of them were on the AE list. But I went 6, 5, 12, and 3, and then down underneath, I pulled in your Bunker Hill. I have no arguments there. I think it's that kind of race. But I put Prayer Book on top, Pletcher, maiden special weight to maiden claiming, first-time gelding symbol. I thought the last couple of turf races were certainly good enough to compete with this bunch while in for the tag. Use Centurion underneath, comes in off some nice and kind of improving efforts for Jimmy Jerkins, and enough to make that one a little bit of a player in Flight to Paradise towards the outside with Castellano for Trombetta. Comes in off a synthetic try at Presque Isle that I thought was pretty good, but a turf try at Belmont just before that went in for a tag. I thought that fit with this bunch. That's the blinkers today. So 6, 5, 12, and 3 for me.
I ended up, and I made Bunker Hill the play of the day, as mentioned, but I thought Centurion and Prayer Book are have plenty of merit, obviously, as the first two choices. I ended up with Caribbean Gold as the as sort of the other player. So I went 10-5-6-3, and you bring up Trombetta there on the outside. Flight to Paradise puts the blinkers on, and I really didn't... I didn't really notice. I was glad, though, that Chad, with that digital software, did not draw in, because that would have upset the apple cart. And I was really kind of panning for, you know, play of the day type gold. And I got to the end of the card, and luckily Bunker Hill kind of grabbed me by the lapels. So I'll put together the pick 5 and pick 4 tickets here after we get off the air, and put it up at the website. And then it'll be over later. But it's a very nice card with 3 stakes. One over the jumps. We got the bonus advantage of the Kaiser today, honoring and the memory of Jonathan Kaiser. And then the Stallion Stake. What'd you do in the Stallion Stake?
Let me look. I will toss while I'm turning the pages, though. That was you said you had Carrie on yesterday, Carrie Bryan, and I had her on the other day. I mean, what a fun story. I mean, for me, it was fun because she used to be an assistant to Jonathan Shepherd, but her first starters at Saratoga, she winds up winning a great one last week. But in the Stallion, I went 4-6-8-1. I couldn't get past Alcala Dream, but I do think Step Dancer and Barrage, I think, are players. I mean, I don't think this one absolutely lays over the bunch, but that the last couple of wins were certainly very nice, including a win in one of these Stallion Series races. Step Dancer was just behind, but Barrage being lightly raced, moving into the Danny Gargan barn, coming in out of a third between those top two, I think there's still maybe some upside potential being lightly raced. Nyrod Ortiz hops on board, so I wouldn't argue against either one of those, particularly, you know, people are playing some pick tickets.
I thought Dreamer's Disease, who ended up scratching. Speaking of Rob Atrus and Tino Diodoro, that was the Diodoro that was going to participate. And actually, I finally have connected. I finally connected with Rob. He actually is off campus. He's away from Saratoga for at least a day, and he's not sure if he's going to be back tomorrow. But we will get Rob Atrus. I can't think of somebody that I've been asked so repeatedly. I mean, going back to the winter when he won the toboggan, and somebody said, "Are you going to have Rob on?" I said, "I'll try to get him," and I kept striking out. We just could not connect, and so it's good to connect and hear from Rob, and so we will get him on. People will hear from him. Pretty exciting. I mean, you could tell how special it was. I mean, the Carrie Breon, you know, she was in tears, and the actresses were, I mean, wide-eyed to execute to that extent. I mean, well, we've got Paul and Duke Matisse coming to join us, of course, as they do every year for an always anticipated Loose on the Lead in a couple of weeks. By the way, it's Duke's birthday, everybody. If you see Duke, see Dukey today. Wish Dukey a happy birthday.
Wish my happy birthday.
Yeah, it's Duke's birthday. And Paul, I'll reiterate again, Paul explained after the Oaks Derby weekend, he said, put a line through. Don't be Maracuja. He said, give her a mulligan. He made it very clear that she had a legitimate excuse. And I'm looking forward to talking to Nick Tamaro tomorrow, because there may not be a more challenging scenario mentally for an exercise, Seth. I mean, we talked about ticket structure at the start of the conversation. We could circle back here and talk about it too, close things out. That's one of those areas that, you know, you're so eager to have a free square in some cases, you know, and you're so, you know, mentally you're kind of greedy looking for a place, and you think, all right, I can single here, and you know, let me go find the right prices to go along with, you know, with that obvious free square, and then, you know, the free square promptly, you know, doesn't, you know, becomes a black hole. It's a very tricky equation mentally.
Well, the much better scenario is to have a real opinion against everybody else's free square.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen very often, but if you come up with that, that's the one where you really want to get excited. I mean, I think you're exactly right. People get into these sequences and start to feel like, oh, hey, there's the free one, and now I can build around it, and I feel pretty good. But, you know, maybe 180 degrees, maybe at the place where you should get more excited, where, oh, everybody's going to be on this one. But you know what? Today, I kind of like the alternative, because that's where, you know, even if your alternative is kind of a logical second choice, if the one you're going against is going to really be strong on everybody's ticket, you're gonna get paid if you're correct.
Well, and when it came to this, you know, Clairiere obviously was the first alternate. When you're going through the tick list, I actually rock paper scissors from a pedigree standpoint to go a mile and an eighth. You know, the distorted humor out of the funny side relative rock side. I thought there was some justification for a mile and an eighth being to her liking. Proved out to be completely, completely a falsehood on my part. I mean, she essentially was eased. She crossed the wire, but, you know, they basically walked her home. And, you know, Maracuja, I really didn't flesh back through that thought process that, you know, that Paul had elucidated, you know, and from a figure standpoint, it was easy to do. I mean, and listen, I'm a speed player. So, you know, looking at that, Clairiere was, you know, that much closer. Maracuja, though, you know, the race and the Gazelle, I mean, if you were looking for a number, if you're playing that way, that was the number that, if you liked Clairiere enough to use her at least as a B, there was Maracuja's Gazelle as something to hang your hat on, and then you fold in, you know, the Oaks trip, and it might be enough, but what was unusual about this, and it's so funny. I mean, we all want full fields, you know, for all the right reasons. I'm sure Todd Pletcher would have preferred a full field for this, because some people think, oh, you know, it's going to be it's a bunch of tomato cans. Well, no, because it changes things. And yes, it's great when a horse is challenged and has to do something that proves metal. I said this on Monday. And, you know, here she was having to set the pace, so that made her essentially a target. And yes, she did win the Tempted that way. But that was as a 2-year-old, and kind of a different scenario. You know, here she's being essentially hounded every step. And you know, she didn't acquit herself badly at all, frankly, under that scenario. But if there had been 6, 7, 8 horses, there would have been, you know, other horses vying. She could have sat and done what she, you know, has shown she has a preference to do, the way she won the Ashland and the Oaks. So, it, you know, there's parts of this equation that were, I guess they, it was an equation that was ripe for an alternate opinion. And so, you know, congratulations to those that leverage that.
No, and you're right. The short horse field angle, I'm sure, played into it, because it does change the dynamic. You start to get below, you know, 6. You start to get 5, certainly 4. funny things can happen. It can play out a little bit differently. You don't get the pace scenario you were anticipating. You're not placed in the race where you normally would be. And so, yeah, you're below half a dozen or so, and things can change. And I think that was clearly a factor on Saturday. I also think the one post position, I wonder if she was out, you know, sitting in the three or the four, whether that might have changed things up as well. But certainly the size of the field had an effect.
Seth Merrow, everybody, and Seth returns. Actually, you don't return till Friday, right?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday this year. Handicapper support racing across America, and loose on the lead. Of course, we missed you last Sunday, although we had you by Zoom.
And I tried to make the most of the Zoom appearance by you know, acting goofy.
Well, we enjoyed it. We thought it was a perfectly good Zoom appearance. We were very happy with it. Just the Zoom worked. We were.
we applaud the smallest victories. Seth Merrow, everybody, on your Twitter, of course. Be sure to follow Seth. He's tremendous fun, and of course he's tremendous fun out at Desperate Annie's and Gaffney's and anywhere else you might see him around Saratoga. And with all the free time that he's got, he's bon vivanting.
There is no free time. I'm taping pieces on Wednesdays and Thursdays, so yeah, nice. Free time is a
relative
wish list kind of thing.
Seth Merrow, too, everybody. Good luck. I'll get the selections and the plays up shortly on the website. We'll see you over there in a little bit. Live from the racetrack tomorrow. I think Lenny Shulman is going to sit in, as well as a visit from Paul Matisse. Maybe Dookie, too. Happy birthday, Duke. Good luck, everybody. I'll talk to you in the morning.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.